Ecclesiastes 7, where we're at. Ecclesiastes 7. Okie doke, 7 and, let's see, 11. That's a paragraph mark. That'd be a good place to start. 7:11. Sounds convenient. Okay, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do ask you to help us now as we come to this holy book, that you'd help us to have hearts and minds that we might honor your words, and we might see what you want us to see, believe what you want us to believe. Lord, I do pray that you'd remove the blinders that some may have. And Lord, I do pray you'd help us to understand what you want us to understand, that the Spirit of God may illuminate our minds, our hearts, so we might understand what you want us to see. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, Ecclesiastes 7:11. Remember, this is a sermon that Solomon preached. I doubt it was in the sword of the Lord back in those days. But he is preaching about life under the sun, and much of it is limited to life under the sun. On occasion, he will mention God, and eventually he's going to draw the listener or the reader of this sermon to the most important conclusion in life, and that is that you ought to fear God and keep his commandments. That is the most important thing. And he's showing all the vanity involved, all the vanity involved with what goes on down here. It's a bunch of hot air. It's got a bunch of shellac on it. You know, makes it look real good and shiny. The apples are all polished real pretty with wax, you know, and everything. And so then you find out you got a great big worm in the apple. And that's how the devil always works. He makes it look good on the outside, but it is hollow on the inside. Okay, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 11. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, and by it there is profit to them that see the sun. Okay, profit, profitable. Okay, the profitable, or the ones who profit, are actually fulfilling things in life, working, using their God-given abilities or the liberties that they have, depending on what country they're in, trying to create something. Now, there's two basic occupations where something is created in that occupation, and one is agriculture, be it corn, soybeans, wheat, whatnot, sorghum, or timber. That's where something is actually created. You put a seed in the ground and new life is developed. And the other is mining. Okay, one should be the backbone of society, which would be agriculture, food. And the other, it provides the economic stability of society, and that's mining. That'd be oil mining, coal mining, gold, silver mines. Those occupations actually create wealth, okay, where something is created. All other occupations may take something and then revamp it, like in construction, okay, but the ones that actually are, something is created, is agriculture and in mining. And when the money goes bad, the money goes south, those are the types of occupations one needs to be a part of, because people got to survive. They got to eat. Okay, and a lot of the other luxurious occupations are just going to go by the wayside. Okay, and so that's profit. Now, the ones who make the country run, to make a country run, are the independent people who work. Okay, there's no such thing as pure communism. No such animal. There is no country that is absolutely communist. Not even in the Soviet Union in its hardest days, not even in China. There's always a black market, always some sort of capitalism where somebody is surviving somehow. Absolute communism never lasts. It cannot last. Okay, so our country's socialist. Obama's a socialist, a fascist. Okay, and so, but yet the ones that make this country go are productive people, the backbone, the middle class, And the non-productive people survive are the parasites, the politics, bunch of ticks, that's the politicians. They survive, they do not create anything productive. It's the ones who work, go to work every day of your free will, and then somebody steals your money from you. That's the non-productive people. Okay, usually you hear Democrats, Republicans, you know, they're talking about tax cut, but it's never discussed. The morality of taxes is not discussed. It's immoral. The whole idea of it is immoral. I have no right to make you give me money at the point of a gun. I have no right to do that. Now, we could do it voluntarily, exchange something. Okay, I as an individual have no right to do that, and neither does a governing body, because a governing body is made up of individuals. They don't have that right either. I don't care what the laws say. That is an immoral act. Okay, and I'm not saying you're not to pay them. You ain't getting out of that. Okay, but still, the idea is an act based on immorality, theft. Taxation is someone stealing someone else's property. Be it called sales tax, income tax, property tax, you know, death tax, you know, capital gains. That's all that it is. In any environment, that's what it is. Okay? And people just don't, they don't discuss the morality of it. They discuss, if you make $100, then at this point in our country, we can take 20 of it and you're not going to gripe too bad. 25, you're going to start griping? Maybe start griping at 30. Up in Canada, it's around a 50 range, and they're still not griping. The politicians will keep pushing it until they can't get away with it. You see? And so the morality is of it, they get zero. That's the morality of it. Biblical morality. Why? Because they're not profitable. The profit is done by the common, ordinary person. Okay? By it, there is profit to them to see the sun. Example, public schools. Public schools have a zero tolerance for violence. That's impressive. If a kid goes like this, pow, pow, with his finger, they'll kick him out of school. They catch him. If he uses his french fry, and kids have been kicked out of school because he used a french fry and saying, pow, pow, zero tolerance of guns in public school. Zero tolerance of violence. The whole system's based on violence. How do they get the money for it? Violence. Now, if a person says, I mean, this is always one thing about taxes where they say, education, that's a valid tax thing. No, it's not. It's all invalid. If a person thinks the tax structure is valid for public education, then you go get a gun, you go house to house, you collect the money instead of having somebody else do it. Okay? And so the whole idea of being a profit to society, what makes a society work, a nation, is people who go out and use their free exercise of their ability to work and create wealth. That's what keeps the country going. And just as amazingly, most people's bodies, they put so much garbage in their bodies and their body still works. I bet you, if you look at the average American's diet, 90% of it's trash. You see, when you leave the produce section of the store, you are now entering the non-food section. Because the produce section is live food, living food, but a lot of that's been gassed. But still, it does have some life there. And if you look at all the food that people put in their body, what they call food, most of it is absolutely garbage, but yet they're still existing. Some not too well, but they are still existing. And the same goes with a nation, with a society. There's so much trash that goes on in a nation, so much theft, but the nation still exists on the productive people, the middle class. That's where the profit comes in. Okay, verse 11, by it there is profit to them to see the sun. Verse 12, for wisdom is defense, and money is a defense. Okay, the love of money is the root of all evil, but money is a defense. Now, money in the Bible is silver coin. Gold and silver coin. Money in the Bible, that's what that is. Money in the Bible doesn't refer to cash, currency, fake currency. That's not in the Bible. Money in the Bible is honest to goodness precious metals. Now, it is a defense. Okay? Money is a tool to use. It is not to be the master. Okay? Wisdom is a defense and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Wisdom is what gives life. And so the wisdom there is what a person should be focusing their time on, spending time in the Word of God. Wisdom gives life. Money doesn't give life. Wisdom gives life. And then he says, verse 13, consider the work of God. Why? Because that's where wisdom's at. Consider the work of God, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? Now notice in the Bible the opposite term, straight and crooked. And the next time somebody says in the public school, are you straight? Yeah, are you crooked? Not gay, crooked. The other word is queer. You see, they cannot talk straight and plain. If he's gay, the opposite is sad. Are you gay? Yeah, I'm a very happy person. So they're implying that us straights are sad people, miserable. You want to find some miserable people, look at the queers. Absolutely miserable. Mad at everybody, especially a dyke. If you are a male, they hate you automatically. Which is kind of nice because then they're not looking at you. Okay, but the queers in this country are in control of the media, sitcoms, the shows, the TV, and they're trying to make that appear normal. We'll have a video clip and a play on that. Little girls.
My two mommies are here.
Little girl, you would not be in existence if you only had two mommies before you were born. And so, every queer is very fortunate that their parents didn't practice what that person believes. Because they wouldn't be here. Okay, and so the idea, the opposite, straight and crooked. Now, for who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? What has God made crooked? Well, the crooked serpent. Because a crooked serpent. God has not made man crooked. Man is crooked. But who did that? Man did that to himself. God made Satan crooked. The crooked serpent he's called. Job 26:13. And nobody can make him straight. Okay? But yet, man has made himself crooked. Verse 14, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Consider what caused the adversity. Consider. Think about God. Now, he's looking at this from life's perspective under the sun. In the New Testament, it would say, in the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, be joyful. In the New Testament, that's what Paul would say. In the Old Testament, life under the sun, consider. Think. God also hath set the one over against the other. One against the other, meaning that if a nation has prosperity, that nation is going to face some difficulty. And our country has gotten away with prosperity for a long, long time. And this country is overdue for great adversity. And it would be a good thing for this country. It would be a good thing for the church. It would be a good thing for Christians. And it would probably be a smart thing to start praying for it. Even though I don't like the idea of it. But it would be a good thing for this country. God also hath set the one over against the other to the end that man should find nothing after him. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. The amazing thing about God is, why would he allow somebody like George Burns to live as long as he did? And then Lester Roloff died at 58. People see Lester Roloff and he ate so healthy and it didn't do him any good. He still died 58. Well, I don't think your health food is going to help when a plane smacks into the ground. Okay, but you know, that's the mysterious thing about God. That's the grace of God. Okay, where he says, a just man perisheth in his righteousness. Old Testament doctrine. Okay, a just man perisheth in his righteousness. Not Christ's righteousness. Old Testament doctrine, where a man lived right. He had his own personal righteousness. New Testament, we have the righteousness of Jesus Christ. And there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Now, that was the big argument between Job and the three pals. They kept saying to Job, you're suffering because you're wicked. Your kids died because they were wicked. Why? It's because that was a general truth under Old Testament doctrine. It's not an absolute. The exception proves a rule. The general truth under the Old Testament doctrine, under Mosaic doctrine, is that when a man lived right, he could expect God to bless him with long life, wealth, and health, and the death of his enemies. And it's not that God would be obligated to do it, but that was the basic general rule under the Old Testament covenant. In the New Testament, that is not even a part of it. New Testament's a whole different ballgame. Verse 16 says, be not righteous over much, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Overwise is getting a big head. Thinking you know everything. Now, of course, this is coming from a man that's supposed to have been the wisest. But the idea is making sure that a person keeps a humble mind. Verse 17, be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? It is good that thou shouldest take hold of this, yea, also from this withdraw not thine hand. For he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. Okay, now he that feareth God, Old Testament doctrine, he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. Also, that's something that's in the New Testament, but that coming forth of them all doesn't really show up until the judgment seat. Okay, that goes in line with like a common saying that the cream always rises to the top. Okay, the ones that fear God rise to the top. Under the Old Testament, they can expect being risen to the top of the social ladder, I guess you can say, under the Old Testament. In the New Testament, the one that fears God rises to the top, but that rising to the top would have to be at the judgment seat of Christ. That's where we'd have to place that doctrine for us. Sometimes people say, well, the cream always rises to the top. You know, and then they kind of get a big head about it, you know, when they're at the top. And then you can smile and say, yeah, but sewage flows too. Just to give them a little more humility there. Okay, and that's how it goes. Okay, he that feareth God, that's the beginning of wisdom, Proverbs 1:7. That is mentioned, I got several cross-references on that about fearing God. This is an absolute fear of God. This is being afraid of God. Okay, and there's one being that was created without fear. And that's Lucifer, or Leviathan. Okay, he was created without fear. He doesn't fear. There's a nice little song people sing that when a little child's on his knees, the Satan trembles. No, he doesn't. He doesn't tremble. That's a cute little song. It's nice to hear. You can ooh and ah over the song, but it's not true. Satan does not fear God. Job 41, verse 33. He doesn't fear God. He doesn't fear you. He doesn't fear me. He doesn't fear anybody. He fears no one. He's created without fear. Now, the devils fear God. One time, this guy got out of jail several years ago, and he was getting out of jail that day when I was there visiting, and so he said, hey, I want you to go talk to my girlfriend. I want you to go talk to her, and so I tried witness to her, and then so off the cuff, you know, she said, well, I believe in God. I said, well, that's a good thing, I guess. And I showed her James 2, verse 19, where it says that the devils believe God and tremble. I said, you fear God? She said, no. I said, see, the devil is doing better than you are. They fear God. They believe in God and tremble. You believe in God, and you don't tremble. The devils are a step up on you. She didn't quite know what to say with that. And that's the problem with American Christians today. They don't fear God. They have no fear of God. They don't recognize that when they sin, they're sinning against a holy God. That holy God was going to kill Adam and Eve for eating fruit. He said, "Thou shalt surely die." Offered a lamb in their stead. That holy God has killed a lot of people. He killed Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5 just because they pretended to be spiritual. Boy, if God killed every spiritual pretender today, the church numbers would drop very quickly. And that thing is when God kills somebody, he killed Herod in Acts 12 just because he didn't give glory to God. He gave him worms, parasites. What a way to go. And man, you find out some way God killed people, took care of them. Boy, you ought to be afraid of God. Now, God will give you a little warnings here and there. He may slap you upside the head here and there. And if he slapped you upside the head a few times, you better watch out. Them knuckles coming next. And you better fear God. A God that spoke this world into existence. A God that speak them stars into existence. A God that spoke hell into existence. Better fear that God. I kind of chuckle. One time, Ruckman, after he got saved, would paint baptistries. They'd put like a picture in the back of a baptistry, something like that. Good artist, I guess. And so, before he was saved, he drew a drawing of the Last Supper where all the disciples were drunk, hanging around over a table. You know, it had Jesus drunk. And he said, after I showed that picture to my wicked buddies, he said, they didn't laugh. That's how bad that picture was. And he said, the first baptistry that he's getting ready to paint, the Lord said to him, "You remember that picture you drew about me? That Last Supper?" He said, "Yeah, I remember that picture." He said, "Do you think there's any good reason I can't cut your hands off right now?" "Yeah, I guess you would be justified to do that." He said, "Okay, I'm not going to do it. Now paint. Paint for me now." And that's God. Better fear God. Better be afraid that God's watching you and I every moment, every day. You know, a lot of times the computers have a history. You know, you run down and see the history and get on some people's computers and see what they've been looking at. Hey, God's keeping track of all that. You can't delete that stuff with Him. And ain't that going to be embarrassing when He brings all that up at the judgment seat? He's going to show everything. Man, ain't that going to be embarrassing? Put it under the blood, and it gets all wiped out. Okay, and so, "He that feareth God shall come forth of them all." Verse 19, "Wisdom strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city." Okay, wisdom strengtheneth the wise. Who gets paid more on a football team? The wise quarterback or the lineman? The quarterback gets paid more. "Wisdom strengtheneth the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city." Now, them 10 mighty men, them linemen can squish that quarterback. A lot of times they like to do it, too. But he still gets paid more. Well, he's got to think more. Verse 20, "There is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not." One of the first times I saw that one really hit home, hit hard. One time, several years ago, there's a fella from over in Napanee area, older gentleman. He had four or five fellows with him, and they would, back in those days, they were protesting churches. And they were across the street protesting the Assembly of God, and telling what a bunch of hypocrites they are and everything. So Dale Kenny went over to start talking to guys, got some of the literature. And when you read the literature, they said that you could be sinless. So I called a guy up and said, "Man, you sinless? Teach people how to be sinless?" I said, "Man, I want to know how to do that." So I had him come over to Rensselaer. And I had five questions he's supposed to answer. And he didn't answer them. He couldn't. This guy was supposed to be sinless. This guy was supposed to be a Bible scholar. He couldn't find Isaiah without a table of contents. The largest book in the Bible chapters, he couldn't find it. And we had some folks ask him some questions. And he would weasel around all of them, pretty much all of them, until Charles Hood raised his hand. Charles Hood was epileptic, had strong medication, sounded like a drunk at all times. And he'd put his one finger up like this. And he'd say, would you read Ecclesiastes 7:20? As soon as he said those words, I go, oh, man. That guy, of course, had to look at his table of contents. He found a verse, and he read that verse out loud. And I go, hot potato, hot potato. He goes, oh, I know what this is. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 19. I said, ooh, that was hot. Head, get rid of that one. 1 Peter 4:18, he had 21. Judgment begins at the house of God. What's that got to do with anything? There's not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. After this guy got telling us that he lived a sinless life, perfect man, upright man, man, he didn't want to handle that verse. That came from, that's when the base things of the world confound the wise. Charles made a fool out of that guy. That guy didn't know what to do with it. Verse 21, 22. Now, these verses show that the author of this Bible is the Lord God. He says, verse 21, also take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. People get all upset. Did you hear what so-and-so said about me? So, it's probably true. Well, they shouldn't say it. Well, and you shouldn't say some things either, should you? And you ought to have some grace towards people. You know, somebody maybe, Boston, you're a foreman on the job, got people on you, you hear one of them griping about you to somebody else, and you get all bent out of shape. Don't you know that you said something about them to somebody else? And that's how it goes. Yeah, people talk. People say things they shouldn't say. We all do that. So, cut them a break. You know, if they want to lie about it, let them lie about it. You can call their hand on it, but there's no reason to get all bent out of shape about it. So, because we've all done that. Verse 23 to 29, these wouldn't be favorite verses for ladies, that's for sure. Solomon goes down through this thing. Verse 23, all this have I proved by wisdom. I said I would be wise, but it was far from me. That which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? I applied mine heart to know, to search, and to seek out wisdom, and the reason of things, and to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. I find more bitter than death. Isn't that a really encouraging thing there? Much more bitter than death. Solomon says, the woman. Now, that's his comment. That ain't my comment. That's his. Okay, back up to verse 25. I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom. Okay, in the New Testament, we have someone that has already done that for us, and if we take heed to him, then he will give us that wisdom. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, 10, and following all the way down to 16. This is a teacher in the New Testament, the Spirit of God, where in 1 Corinthians 2, verse 9, but as is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him, but God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. And then verse 11, 12, down through the end, that shows how the Spirit of God teaches. So that's how we get the wisdom in the New Testament, is through the Spirit of God. Solomon in the Old Testament was getting wisdom by applying his heart to know, to search, to seek out wisdom and the reason of things. Why? And to know the wickedness of folly. Now there, Romans 16 says we are to be simple toward the evil. But to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. Okay, now actually 26 down to 29. This is obviously a slam on the ladies. Okay, and so he says, I find more bitter than death the woman, whose heart is snares and nets, and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. Now, what kind of a woman is he talking about? Okay, this would be like a guy complaining about his wife where he met her at the bar. Where did this guy find the women he got? What do you have, 700 wives, 300 concubines, something like that? Where was he looking for these women? These were idolaters. What does he expect? You know, he was getting these women from Egypt, from all these outlandish women. And under the Old Testament covenant, that was a sin for Solomon to do that, Nehemiah 13:26. And he didn't like the women he had. Why don't you look for a better place for them? And so he's griping about his wives, the multitude of wives he had, trying to get away from them. Verse 27, behold, this have I found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account, which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among a thousand have I found, but a woman among those have I not found. He said, I'm looking for a wise man, I'm looking for a good man. He said, I count a thousand men, I can find one guy out of the bunch that's pretty good. I can't find one out of a thousand women. Again, where did he find those women? Found them in the trash heaps. What's his gripe? But a woman among all those have I not found. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they sought out many inventions. God made man, Adam, upright. God made Adam perfect. God made Satan crooked. Leviathan crooked. That which God has made straight, crooked. Okay, what God has made crooked, no man can make straight. And what God has made straight, who can make that straight which he hath made crooked? Nobody. Man has corrupted himself. God made man upright, verse 29. But they have sought out many inventions. What kind of inventions? Wicked inventions. Inventions of the heart. Imaginations of the heart. And when a man starts going down that path, nothing will satisfy them, and they will get more and more corrupt. Every single Satanist did not get up one day and start thinking, oh, I'm going to sacrifice somebody to Satan. No, they started off dabbling with a Ouija and kept going down that path. Even a pervert, every pervert did not wake up someday and say, oh, I think I'm a pervert. They're not a born a sodomite. Nobody's born a sodomite. You see, and what they did, it was a slow process. Looking at porn, you know, here, there, you know, looking at this, looking at that. Then they get tired of looking at that. Okay, and then they start looking for their own. They get so corrupt, so pervert, and they keep going down that thing, then they'll start looking at animals. They just get more and more corrupt. You see, it just doesn't happen overnight. It's a very slow process down the path. You see, and it's man's fault. They have sought out many inventions. Those aren't good inventions. Those are wicked inventions. Those are inventions that you find out there at the adult bookstore. Perverts out there. You see, and that starts off someday as a little pure child. You see, and goes down that wicked path. You know, every wretched, wicked murderer that's in jail, one day in their life, there was an innocent baby in some mama's hands. How did it go from there down there? Slow path. Music, television, internet. You know, it just kept going down this tinker path, getting away from it. Okay, so that's end of chapter 7. We'll start chapter 8 next time. Any questions or comments? Are we covered? Jeremy?